Authority and responsibility should be commensurate with each other. Means they should go, it should be proportionate to each other. I give you so much of authority and I hold you responsible 10 times. Not commensurate. I give you rather higher authority and less responsibility, then again there's a problem, like I told you earlier. These two things have to be properly counterweighed. Authority is like power. If I give you power without holding you accountable or responsible, I'm a fool. I'm doing a disservice to your position as well as to the company, as well as to my own position. On the other hand, no authority, only responsibility and accountability, you can't take any decisions, then what am I doing? I'm killing you. I'm not allowing you to grow. When I don't allow you to grow, I'm not creating future managers. I'm doing a disservice to myself. I'm holding on to my own position for various reasons, fear, etc., etc. Now, these two are two dangerous things to happen. So, both have to complement each other. One is organization-based authority. Responsibility is person-based, if you notice. So, the person and the organization needs both have to match. If they don't match, there's a problem. Right? A subordinate can discharge his duties effectively and efficiently if there is a proper delegation of authority, otherwise the subordinate cannot succeed in accomplishing the assigned task. Authority without responsibility will make the subordinate a careless person. Likewise, responsibility without authority will make the subordinate an inefficient person. Therefore, there should be a proper balance between authority and responsibility. Now comes unity of command. The principle of unity of command, as we have learnt earlier, insists that subordinate should get instruction from only one superior. In other words, a subordinate should be assigned duties and responsibilities by only one superior and he is accountable only to the concerned superior. Lot of wordings, but it simply conveys that one boss. If a subordinate gets orders, instructions and directions from more than one superior, it will create uncertainty and confusion in the organization. In such situation, the subordinate will find it very difficult to determine whose instructions, orders and directions he should carry out. Now there again, I'd like to add on something. Here we are assuming that it's a typical, shall I say, classical organization. Organization structure and it's following the scalar principle. We have learnt in another chapter, types of organization, that there are other organizations like project organization, matrix organizations, wherein the reporting is not always scalar, doesn't come top to bottom. So it's not given in the books. I would like to add on that this particular unity of command has to be understood regardless of from how many sources it comes. In a typical classical organization, a typical traditional organization, it flows from top to bottom, Henry Fayol principle. But in a matrix organization or a project organization or even in a free form organization, which we have learnt, these people from here, where the unity of command is coming, has to be understood. Some of you may be working in matrix organizations. So there is a vertical and a horizontal, as you know. A number of people are there to whom you have to be reporting and be accountable. Number of people on this side to whom you are reporting and accountable. So you must know from where the unity of command has to be properly addressed. So while this discussion, which is given in all the books, is assuming the structure of the organization being traditional, it is also applicable for other organizations, which we learn in types of organizations chapter. This is a point I wanted to drive home, right? Now, taking it further, definitions of limitation of authority. Definition of limitations of authority. A person knows well that a person having authority alone can delegate the authority properly. Like I told you at the beginning of the discussion, that when authority is given to me and a legitimacy is given to me, a position, then it's good. Take the example of this video shoot. I'm a faculty here, visiting faculty. This particular position is given to me. This organization is what I'm representing right now, V School. And because of this particular position given to me, I am being able to give the authority is endowed on me, it's bestowed on me. So when the authority is given to me, what happens? I am in a position to do my task because I have a backup. I have been given certain guidelines and instructions, what needs to be done, how to deliver the lecture. So once this is given to me, it's easy for me to assume the responsibility and be accountable for what I do. In other words, the authority is a framework of the organization given to you, which enables you to hold your responsibility and your accountability pretty well. If this is not given to me, then these two will become my own initiative if I want to take an initiative. Okay? So, there should be written manuals which help people to understand their authority in right direction. This will avoid confusion regarding delegation of authority. This is what an organization thinks of. I would rather say that more than having written manuals alone, one needs to be clearly told from time to time that these are what I'm supposed to do. Your appointment letter, your letter of confirmation gives you all the various things you're supposed to do. Your KRAs keep changing from time to time. Key result areas of working, key performance, action steps to be taken. So all those things have to be articulated, right? Now we talk some types of delegation. There are different types of delegation which were being discussed. Very easy to understand. First, we talk about general delegation. General delegation means granting authority to subordinates to perform various managerial functions and exercise control over his subordinates. Okay, that means I have my subordinates working with me. Actually, this terminology is a little archaic. It's a little old. General delegation means I'm just passing on work to people and telling them to do what they are supposed to do. This is a part of the delegation anyway. So this terminology was created long back, so we are just studying it. So it's a little archaic, let me confess. Specific delegation is what we talk about. For example, the personal manager or the HR head may be delegated authority for selection of personnel, training of personnel, placement of personnel, etc. Specifically, he is told that this is what he is supposed to do. Under the HR head, we may have training manager separately, specific delegation. We may have a separate person who is handling payroll, separate, this specific delegation, right? Then we have written delegation. All delegation has to be written because the whole process of organizations are based on records and reports. They have to be documented because it can't be your word against my word. So delegation has to be always in the written form. And in a delegation, a written form, it comprises of two things, orders and instructions, which are clear cut. Next comes unwritten delegation. Now what's an unwritten delegation? Delegation that comes out of word of mouth. Now, a written delegation is usually backed up with an unwritten delegation. For example, your boss might give you an email about something to be done, and then he may come and talk to you also at your table. He say, okay, did you get the mail? Have you done it? So please do it properly, carefully. The personal touch is important. That's where the unwritten delegation comes. Only unwritten is dangerous. Only unwritten can land you in trouble. So make sure that all delegation is written, right? Formal delegation is what happens in an organization which is structured. There are two types of organizations we learnt in the chapter on organizations, formal and informal. In a formal organization, the delegation is formal, the accountability levels are very high, the authority is also given pretty well, and the responsibility levels are very high. That's formal. In an informal organization, the delegation is very informal. For example, among friends and buddies, when you sit together, you delegate work to that person. Typically, we're going to a picnic. We delegate work. So-and-so, you make arrangements of the food. So-and-so makes arrangement for the games. So-and-so makes arrangement for the music. There's a loose delegation. Now, in this delegation, the accountability levels are not high. Neither are the responsibility levels. And the authority is also a little flimsy. So, if people don't do, they don't get pulled up. Unlike in a formal delegation. Informal delegation is a little loose. Because there, the focus is relationship. But in a formal organization, this is not relationship, it is actually results, right? Then we talk about downward delegation, which is common for donkey's years has been going on. All delegations is top down. Then we have a very interesting delegation called accrued delegation. Subordinate is delegating work to the superior. When does this happen? When the subordinate is overloaded, at the same time there is a crucial work that has come up, a contingency has taken place, then the subordinate may accrue his delegation upwards to the senior. For example, the subordinate has been scheduled to do two tasks on the same day with a time gap which is too short. He has to go to the city side for a very crucial meeting at about say 11 a.m. and then at about 1:30 he has to go to the remote suburbs far away from the city, say 35-40 kilometers. At 1:30 he has to reach there for another important crucial meeting. Due to some reason, one of the meeting has got postponed to this day, the day when he is supposed to take it. So he comes back to the senior and says, sir, this is my issue, what shall we do? Senior might say, if there is a crew delegation, he said, don't worry, to the remote suburbs I'll go, you take care of this. That again requires the organization's proper cultural backup, right? But there are seniors who say, I don't care what you do, do both. If it's humanly possible, by little stretch, it is understandable. But if it is humanly impossible, then you are not delegating, you are putting the person on the fire, thereby putting yourself in the fire. Let us be demanding, but let us not be unreasonable to the extent of being cruel with people. This cruelty is something that needs to be little looked into by people, right? Then we have sideward delegation. A person delegates authority to another person who is also in the same rank as he is in the organization. Let me add something as far as the earlier one is concerned, accrued delegation. In an accrued delegation, at the end of the day, let us say the junior has given some work to me to be done. If I don't do it well, who is still responsible? He is responsible. In a delegation, ultimately the buck stops with the person who delegates. He is called as a delegator and the delegatee. In a sideward delegation, what happens is I delegate work to my peers. For example, sales guys on the field, you know, in a city like Mumbai, let's say, there are different zones in a typical pharmaceutical industry or in a FMCG. So there are sales boys who are going on the field. So they have some areas allocated. A certain area X is given to one youngster and an area Y adjacent to X is given, two geographical locations. On a particular time, in a particular period, let's say that X is overloaded. He's heavily overloaded. Now he could request Y, he could delegate some work to Y so that he comes over to X and does some work for him. Sideward delegation is done informally. Sideward delegation is done informally, taking the larger picture of the organization, and the sideward delegation is done in such a way that ultimately the results have to come in favor of what needs to be done. Sideward delegations is usually give and take. So just as X had a pressure today, he told Y to come, tomorrow Y may have a pressure X has to come. It's a reciprocal relationship that needs to be understood. At the end of it, we work like a team. Yeah, it's my territory and that's your territory. So what? At the end of the day, when I am taking accrued delegation, sideward delegation from you, you might also expect it from me. So that grace, that conviviality, that type of a give and take is a very important part. Right? Now comes a major part of delegation which I've been wanting to come to and we have arrived at it. Problems in delegation. Many of you must have faced this. The two people, the senior and the junior. Now the problems on the part of the senior, superior. Many superiors hesitate to delegate. Why? Many superiors think that he is better than the others. I'm the boss. I know the best. I've spent so many years. This is one feeling. Second, some superiors prefer to retain powers in their hand. If I give away the work, this guy will learn and he will land up in my place and it will be a threat for me. Who feels this? A person who is not confident about his job, his work, his abilities, his skills, who is not aware about his powers. So people who are not sure about themselves, who are not truly ambitious, who are not truly wanting to go up in the ladder, they want to retain their seats, they will have this. Many middle managers are guilty of doing this. Holding on to the powers, playing dirty politics, trying to withhold information with the delegates, with the people below, and then trying to make them squirm. Now this is a very dirty thing, but people do it. And so they hesitate to give delegated work to the juniors. Many superiors lack the ability to delegate the subordinate. Now it's a lack of ability in this case. They do not know how to delegate. They give some work on an ad hoc basis. So the person who is delegating, the manager, should know the art of delegating. There's a training program that actually takes care of how to learn to delegate. Let me talk a little about it. There are two types of information that comes on my table as a manager. One information is classified information, which I shall not share with anybody because it's a crucial part of my work. The second part of information is functional information, which is what is visible to be done by me, which is seen by me, which is seen by others. So out of the functional information, I need to delegate. While I need to hold back what is classified with me, I need to give away part of my functional work, functional information. I need to have the awareness to know that this is confidential and this is functional to begin with. There's a possibility that my junior might come back to me seeking some part of my confidential work. I got to tell him, look, that's my part of it, I'll take care of it. I got to reassure him, telling him, don't worry, if that comes to it, I have the authority to take care of it. Now, this dialogue doesn't happen because managers get promoted by virtue of being in the company for 8 years, 9 years, they fight and get a promotion through appraisal. After reaching there, they do not know their complete gamut of what they're doing, most of them. And so they do not know to separate this is confidential and this is functional. I'm giving you a little bit of input from the training that is done for on how to delegate, how to learn delegation. Because delegation is an art. Not many managers know how to delegate. They have the inability to delegate. That's why they get into trouble. And the subordinates are underutilized or they're overutilized. There is a lopsided way of giving work. And then the accountability responsibility comes. They do not know what to do. And the appraisal, which is a stock taking of what they have done, becomes a big farce. Right? Superiors also tend to show lack of confidence in subordinates. When the subordinate does not give the type of attitude, like I know one person who's supposed to be support to the functions that I'm doing. Now, a youngster, very talented, but the way his attitude is, people, we don't feel confident to delegate work to him. And when we have told him a number of times that, look, this is what you need to tune, he's unaware and switched off from the core work. And he lands everybody into trouble because of his lassitude, because of his laxity. So what will happen is, as managers, you will not have confidence in giving the work to that person because he is lacking that attitude, right? Now comes the subordinates. There are many other reasons why the hesitation takes place. We have just taken four. Most of the reasons are the insecurities of the person, his own personality, or the way the subordinates are operating or not operating. So all those human equations, the human factors are the causes of the hesitation. Hesitation on the part of the subordinates. Some subordinates love spoon feeding. Everything should come on my table. Boss has given me only 9 units of information out of 10. Unless the 10th comes, I'll not do. So they don't take the delegation totally. Even if they do something, they'll do something which is messy. Right? Fear of criticism. This is a very common thing in many Indian companies. Because every boss expects that you must do only right work. You must always produce positive results. Give me the good news, keep the bad news. So when the attitude is give me the good news and keep the bad news, I will always be afraid of criticism. My efforts are being put on. They are yet to produce results, but the boss is asking for results today. I am halfway through. I am 80% through. But he is criticizing me. Whenever a person is in the process of development, and you criticize, you know what happens? That person withdraws into his old behavior. He will not proceed further. If that is your wish, then you can put him back in the seat. But that's a very evil wish. Instead, if a person is developing, you encourage him, then you can actually delegate better to him. He'll take up the delegation. He will not have the fear of criticism. We need to do what is called as critique and not criticism. C-R-I-T-I-Q-U-E. Critic means I give an objective view about what needs to be done. I don't focus on the person, but on the work. Now, if you do that time and again, it's an art. When you do that, the person will not take it on himself and he will not be afraid of criticism. And he will improve on the work. And the fear of failure. Failure with respect to not producing results. If I am emphasizing all the time that I want results, I want results, I want results. Yes, results are important. But if results alone become the focus, then people will show results which are not results. Like botching up figures of sales, making some adjustments here and there, then unethical practices come. And when the unethical practices, why are they coming? Because there's a fear of failure, criticism, and many other things. Right? So, now we come to a topic called decentralization. Again, in the earlier one, let me also add, when we talk about hesitation from seniors and subordinates, there's a list of it, huge list of it. Right? One needs to identify why one hesitates. Okay? Now I come to decentralization. So before explaining this, let's understand this, which I've already spoken about. Every position has got three attributes. Every position has got three attributes: power, authority, responsibility. And all the three add up to the accountability of the position held. When the power to take decisions, especially critical ones, rests with a single person or a group of few people, it is said to be centralized. Centralization is one term we need to understand. Centralization means what? I am the sole authority, I am the sole power center, and what I say you better do. You cannot take any decisions. Centralized. Me or a group of people around me. So when one person or a group of people are centralizing all decision makings, critical ones, you have to refer to them, then that is called a centralization. Now what is power? Let's explain, let's understand. Power, by my definition, is the degree of freedom given to a position to use the authority and the responsibility in a effective manner. I'll repeat. It's a degree of freedom given to my position to use my responsibility and my authority effectively. Imagine a particular square in which you're standing in the middle. So the entire square boundaries are the degree of freedom given to you. Now you can move right up to the boundary or you can stay in the center. It is highly subjective. Power is given to every position, but few people know how to identify what is my power, to use the power judiciously. That requires a skill, and then not to abuse or misuse power. Few people know this. So if the degree of freedom given to me is known by me, then what happens is I know how much to move in that square. The square which is basically my position. There are people who are averse to power taking. They are averse to taking risk. So they'll remain in the center of the square. They'll not go outside and move around. Power has got a risk element in it. The risk is what? I take the power to take a decision. If the decision clicks, great. If it doesn't click, then I have to bear the brunt. And as you grow higher in the organization, the power is very huge. The degree of freedom is very huge. One small tip I can give you. If you are a person of integrity, which is, if you are accountable, if you are responsible, if you know your authority well, and you are really doing good for the organization, then you know how to use power. There is a clarity when you reach senior levels. People who reach senior levels of working, their power, they don't understand what to do because they have not been clear. Clarity gives you a very good power, how to use your power. There are people in the political field also today who have got very good clarity about how to use the power. There are people in the industry also. There are people you come across in social circles. You come across at homes, grandfathers, grandmothers, some parents. They know how to use their power because they are very clear. Suffice it to say, the bottom line, it's not mentioned in the principles of management books. The bottom line of any centralization or decentralization is the level to which the person is integrated, how much of integrity he has or she has, right? So this is about when the power is given away either partially or wholly to others, it is called a decentralized. Decentralization means what? There are times when everything comes to me, I may not be able to take decisions. It becomes too very cumbersome for me, too challenging. For example, I set up a particular unit in a city like Mumbai to begin with. This unit grows. And then as it grows, I realize that I'm getting business from other cities as well. So I set up another unit, let us say in a place like Baroda. So in a place like Baroda, I appoint a branch manager there or unit head. Now this unit head, to begin with, he will be reporting to me. I'm delegating work to him. So he doesn't have powers, zero power, except for the work that he's doing, for which he is having the authority, responsibility and accountability. A stage comes where Baroda business is picking up like anything, and to stay competitive, he has to take timely decisions. So since he has to take timely decisions, we decide that let me decentralize my power. So I'll tell him, Mr. So-and-so, take up this thing, and now onwards you're on your own. You take all these crucial decisions which I used to take, rest of them I'll take care of it. Whenever you want to take quick decisions and you want to stay competitive and you find it is feasible in terms of resource, in terms of manpower employed, in terms of money used, in terms of materials utilized, in terms of machines, in terms of methods and processes, then decentralization is really worth it. So decentralization is resorted to when you realize that the work is getting too challenging for one person or the group of people who are centralizing their work, and it becomes easy and facilitative for somebody else to take the power. Having said this, the accountability levels are very, very high. We typically come across the strategic business units, SBUs we call them. Those are nothing but decentralized units of power. A product group in a company comes under an SBU, strategic business unit. So in the strategic business unit, the person is given a total autonomy, a freedom to act upon whom to hire, how to hire, what materials to use. At the end of the day, the bottom line has to be achieved. If he doesn't achieve it, he gets punished. If he achieves it, he gets hugely rewarded. The risk element is high on either side, right? So, decentralization means that each section has its own workers to perform activities within the department. There'll be no general office or provider. This is something given from the book, but I've explained to you a little more extra, right? Under decentralization, separate staff are allocated to each department for performing those activities which cannot be centralized. Advantages of decentralization: it saves on time, greater efficiency and output, maintenance of secrecy. Okay, that unit takes care of itself pretty well in its own working. Departmental loyalty comes. I won't call it only for departmental. It's all about the one gets, rather than using the word loyalty, I would say affiliation, and certain amount of validation takes place. However, the disadvantages are what: work division may not be proper if there is no focus and clarity. Duplication of work might take place. Duplication as in what? You may have one HR manager here in Mumbai, we may have another HR manager there. That is duplication of resources. But then it becomes duplication only when the feasibility is not worked out. It should be worth it in hiring two HR managers, one here and one in Baroda, in terms of the income that we are getting and the profits which we will be generating, right? No standardization and heavy expenditure. Now, when we say standardization, means we mean that each unit will work with its own norms. I would say nothing wrong in that. If every unit is comfortable the way they are working, let them work, right? And then heavy expenditure. Now, heavy expenditure as in hiring two of everything, two HR managers, two finance managers. Maybe I have one machine which is expensive in this place. I may have to have one more machine there, equally expensive there. So this is what is the heavy expenditure they're talking about, right? Now comes responsibility, which I've been talking about at length. It's an obligation to do something. In other words, responsibility is an obligation to perform the tasks, functions or assignments of the organization. Responsibility always arises from the superior subordinate relationship. The essence of responsibilities is obligation. When we say obligation, means the position has been given to me, I am obliged to do it. It's a human effort, it's a human element, right? If a person is entrusted with any work, he should be held responsible for the work that he completes. Simple wordings. Now we talk about the last concluding part of our discussion, which is called a span of management. Span of management. Now, what is span of management? Span of management means the number of people managed efficiently by a single officer in the organization, a single manager. Under one manager, there are a number of people reporting. These people who are reporting to me are called as a span of management. Very simple. Okay? It implies that a single executive should not be expected to give guidance to more people. Only limited number of persons are allocated to executives for dividing the work of duties among the workers. So in order to avoid overburden of the officers, it is essential to determine the span of control to the executive officers. long worded, I'll explain to you simple. When I'm delegating work to someone, what is the purpose? I want to divide my work, right? I also want to make future managers. Now, there are the more number of people below me, my work will get done faster. Agreed? The less number of people, it will get slower than more number of people. Now, if I have more number of people, very good, but an issue arises. More number of people, more number of chaos, more relationship complexities. Less number of people, less relationship complexities, but we'll have the work done longer. So there is a particular type of an approach, an equation, a formula, which is called as the Gryconas equation or the Gryconas formula, which states how to know what is the optimum number of people who should report to one manager. How to know what is the optimum number of people who are reporting to one manager. Now, to arrive at that, we have to go through this discussion, right? So let's take it further into different types of, this is the Gryconas theory of span of management, as I spoke some time back. There is what is called as a direct single relationship. There are certain relationship metrics, relationship equations which we need to understand, which is nothing but communication, right? Now, direct single relationship is one in which a supervisor or a manager has direct relationship with his subordinates individually. If a supervisor, if A supervises B and C, who are the subordinate, there are two direct single relationships. It is explained with the help of the following chart. There's a supervisor A, and to him are reporting two subordinates B and C. What does it mean in physical terms? There is A and B reporting to me. I'm the manager. There are two people, A and B, reporting to me. I talk to A separately, not in a joint meeting. I talk to B separately, not in a joint meeting. Now, when I talk to A separately and I talk to B separately, this is called as a direct single relationship. What is so great about it? Lots of things. When I'm in a meeting with both of them around, same words I'm expressing will be interpreted differently by both of them. Agreed? And when they're interpreting it differently, that becomes a little complex and challenging. Then I do not know how my words have been interpreted by A and how it has been interpreted by B. I go back to my office with the assumption that both of them have understood. So direct single relationship by far is, according to me, the best form of creating a good amount of relationship, equation, and confidence and trust. One has to find time to talk to each of the subordinates separately. When he or she does that, you will find that this relationship matures into effectiveness. The point is, many managers complain that they do not have the time to know their resources. If there are 15 people reporting to you in a BPO, or you're having something like 8 or 9 people reporting to you in a manufacturing unit below you, then managers come and tell me, I don't have the time to do this. My take is, find the time. I must know my resources. There are times when even before I know my resources, they have left the company. I assumed, they assumed, and the assumptions compounded, and they left the company without even knowing what is what. Now, this is bad HR practice. Very bad. Right? Now, this is the first relationship we discussed. Second comes a direct group relationship. In a direct group relationship, the supervisor has a direct relationship with his subordinate jointly. It is explained with the help of the following chart. There is a supervisor A, there is a subordinate B, and a subordinate C. Now here, what are we doing? Consultation. A can consult B while C is present in the situation. In another situation, A can consult C while B is present. That means all the three of them are there. The typical group meetings which some of you have every Monday morning or probably every day in the office. The boss calls you for a meeting. Everybody goes and sits there. He makes some presentation. He talks. All of you discuss. You argue. You have give and takes. And then you go back to your seats. Tell me honestly, these group meetings, how many of them effectively get translated into action by each of you? How many of these group meetings get effectively translated into action by each of you? when you come out of a group meeting, have you noticed each one interprets what the boss said in a different way? Now, who's interpreting it correctly? Nobody knows. The only person who's supposed to know is the boss. So if he has a type of a direct group relationship, will he be able to interpret it properly? He won't. He won't even know for Adams what's going on. Now, if the boss is having a group meeting, let him have a group meeting, nothing wrong about it. But after the group meeting, could he calibrate? Could he check out with each of them one to one on an informal basis? What have you understood about today's meeting? What's your take on this? What is your opinion? Now, by doing that, what is he doing? He is doing this because of paucity of time and also augmenting it with the earlier one which we talked about, direct single relationship. By all means, have this, but see that that also happens. This is more complex than that. The interpretations and the assumptions are plenty when you go for this. And this is what creates confusion. Right? And now we come to the third one, cross relationship. Here, the relationship prevailing between B and C, B and C are there, is cross relationship. The number of direct and cross relationships increases geometrically as the number of subordinates under the supervisor increase. I'm not dwelling on this now because it will become a little challenging. What I'll do is I'll just explain to you. B is working under A. C is also working under A. The work of C and the work of B are linked with each other. I'll give you an example. If I'm a sales manager, I got 5 salesmen working under me. Each of their work is independent of each other. Different territories. That is the earlier one. Direct group relationship. In a cross relationship, I am a finance manager. Below me, there's a taxation executive and there's another executive who takes care of capex, capital expenditure. Now, are these two work related or not? They are. So what I say is interpreted by my tax manager in a different way, and what I say is interpreted differently by the capex manager. Now, both of them are related with their jobs. So there's a push-pull as far as the same information which is interpreted by them differently. This becomes extremely complex. Extremely complex. In fact, you get the shades of this in a matrix organization. Okay. Now, this relationship. Now, what we have written here is the number of direct and cross relationships increase geometrically as the number of subordinates under the supervisor increase. There's a gentleman called V.A. Graikonas, who actually studied this and he created an equation. And that equation is what we will be talking about right now. Here is a equation. V.A. Graikonas prescribed the following formula to ascertain the number of superiors and the subordinates relationship. He said that if your span of management has to be effective, it should have a certain number of people depending upon the level at which the organization is. Typically, we talk about pyramid organization, a type of a tall structure as you call it. Say the number of levels may be say 8 or 10 or 12, depends. At each level, if you notice, why is it called a pyramid? Less number of people reporting to the senior at the top and more number of people reporting to the senior at the bottom. Take any organization chart, you'll come to know this. Right? Now, what is, he said there's a formula called the number of relationships R is equal to N into multiplied by open bracket 2 raised to N divided by 2 plus open bracket N minus 1 close bracket and open again the close the curly bracket. So, where N is the number of subordinates. If N is equal to 5, then the relationship R comes to 100. Before I explain this, let me explain to you what it is all about in physical terms. The number of complexities, the number of what I call Chinese whispers, the number of distortion of information is what is high when the relationships are high. If there is one subordinate reporting to me, the complexity is the minimum and the least. If there are two people reporting to me, then the complexity is little more than the one person reporting to me. If there are three people reporting to me, the complexity keeps on compounding. If you see your textbooks, there's a table given in the last page which tells you the number of relationships on one side and the other side, a number of subordinates on one side, N, and the relationship R on the right hand side. that are increases in geometric progression. Let me explain to you in physical terms. Very simple example. I have two people reporting to me, A and B. I tell A, I go to the table one afternoon and I ask, A is sitting alone, B is not there. So I ask A, I tell A that look, tomorrow I may not come to the office. What am I saying? Tomorrow I may not come to the office. B is absent. B has gone out somewhere. And I push out. After some time, B comes and sits there. So A is telling B, you know, sir is not going to come tomorrow. What is he saying? Sir is not going to come tomorrow. This is a Chinese whispers. What did I say? I may not come tomorrow. A may tell him that sir is not coming or may not come, but B may learn it differently. So what happens is there's a distortion of what I said to from A to B among themselves, between themselves. Now, next day morning, what happens is I come to the office and B is absent. So I call up B, where are you, sir? I heard you are not coming today. I've taken a compensatory off. So who told you I'm not coming? I said, I may not come. So A says, I said, A, what did you say? I told him I may not come. Do we come across these type of situation or not? We do. Now, this is only a simple, small, tiny example I've given you. Imagine the chaos we are creating when we do not understand the relationship complexity. What I need to have done was understand, ask A, what have you communicated? Will you tell him in so many words? I should have done that. I didn't do it. And I went away. So this complexity took place. Imagine the amount of loss that happens to organizations because of these Chinese whispers. Just imagine. Now, the point I'm driving home is just for two people. If I had three and four and five and six, and I pass on one message, see the way it is interpreted. Have I calibrated whether everybody got the message the way I wanted them to get it? I have not done it. So in the Graikonos equation, he tells us the importance of learning to manage the relationships to whatever is manageable. It has been observed as a thumb rule that at the junior most level, I can handle about 8 to 9 people below me. The middle management level, it comes to 4 or 5. At the top, it can be less than that. The reason? At the bottom level, the work is easily tangibilized. At the lowest level, a person is doing some work. How do we measure his work? By the output he gives. Output can be number of units sold or manufactured, number of service calls made. It's very easy, junior level. That's what first people work with content. Then when they come up, they work with process. So when he gets senior, when he comes up, we are measuring him not by the content alone, we are working with the process. A salesman is asked to sell X number of some FMCG products, and when he keeps on selling higher and higher quantities, we eventually promote him. Initially works alone. Later on what happens, he becomes what is called as area manager. One area is given under him, to him. He's got number of other people who are working alone. Now he has to take care of his output, plus he has to monitor everybody. The monitoring part of it is human element that can't be measured. So we pay him more. He has to develop a skill of how to monitor people, how to manage people. So as you go higher and higher in the organization, what happens? The complexity of your work starts increasing. Since the complexity increases, the abstract is more than the concrete. And when we are communicating with people, if the abstract is not clarified properly, which is why we have long meetings in companies at the senior level, because many abstracts have to be clarified. If it is not done, then what happens is we go for a major toss. So just to sum it up, in a span of management, there is a need for us to understand the complexity of the relationships. Let me add one more thing. In your table given in your book, the relationships given are very, very huge numbers are given as it descends down. From 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 to 5, as you go down, you'll find huge, the relationship are very huge. We are only telling you that the complexity could be that high. The good news is, in reality, that doesn't happen all the time. But an effective manager has to be prepared for the worst and ensure that the moment I've hired one extra person, the complexity is going to compound in a geometric progression. That's what we are showing here in the earlier slide. Every additional resource who's joining you is going to create a new type of relationship equation. Haven't you noticed it in your organization? Your department is growing. You're having 5 members right now. A 6th one is getting added. When the 6th one comes, suddenly things start changing. Remember this Graikonas discussion, and you'll know how to handle the new person who comes in. If you try to make him over comfortable, the others feel unhappy. If you make him come with these people, he may not willingly come. These people may not willingly accept him. So how to dovetail, how to make this person quickly a part of it is a skill which certain managers know how to do. Many do not. Right? So friends, with this, I conclude this session, and I'm sure there's been a good learning. 3 things we talked about today: delegation, decentralization, and also we talked about span of management. Thank you very much.